From WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. As Nazi power spread in the 1930s and Jews in Europe struggled to escape, many countries closed their borders to Jewish refugees. An exception was the international city of Shanghai, China, which required no visa. Thousands of Jews made their way across continents to shelter in Shanghai. Marvin Pinkert, director of the Jewish Museum of Maryland, explains how the early welcome the refugees received withers after Japan, a Nazi ally, occupies Shanghai.
From 1943, they are confined to the ghetto, but they are able to survive the war because the Japanese refused to adopt the German plan to exterminate them.
And we meet a Pikesville resident who was born in Shanghai and is now a world ping pong champion. It's on the record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. During World War II, Jews fled Nazi persecution by emigrating in droves to countries that offered a safe haven, until they couldn't. As many closed their borders to Jews and the war raged on, thousands still sought escape. One available route to freedom led to Shanghai, China. That little-known story of Jewish migration is the focus of the exhibit the Jewish Museum of Maryland is opening this weekend. It's called Jewish Refugees and Shanghai. Through first-person stories, photos, and personal artifacts, it explores the journey and the integration of these refugees with their Chinese neighbors. Later in the show, we'll hear from an 81-year-old Jewish ping-pong champion in Baltimore who earned his chops in Shanghai.
And then there's this young Jewish kid, 17-year-old Jewish kid, who beats the champion of China, champion of Asia, and champion of Hong Kong.
But first, Executive Director Marvin Pinkert joins us to talk about what visitors to the Jewish Museum will experience. Welcome back to On the Record, Marvin.
Thank you, Sheila.
Borders were closing to immigrants, to refugees in particular. Why did China welcome them?
Well, it's a complicated story, but China did not have a visa requirement to enter, unlike most of the world, in part because they were under Japanese occupation from 1937 on, and at least Shanghai was. And so you only needed to get the visa to get out of Germany or Austria. You didn't need a visa to come into a country. And in 1938, the Western nations all got together at what's known as the Evian Conference in France. And they all wrung their hands about how terrible it was what was happening to the Jews of Europe. And then they did nothing. There was too much domestic pressure to keep their borders closed and to keep out refugees. Only the Dominican Republic and Costa Rica would accept Jewish refugees, and then a small number. So that closed off almost every avenue. But it turned out that there were some folks, both the Consul General from China in Austria, the Consul General of Japan in Lithuania, both were critical in passing out visas to enter into Japan and Shanghai. And eventually 20,000 Jews would make their way from Europe to Shanghai to survive the war there.
Let me make sure I understand. China... Shanghai didn't actually require a visa to enter, but a refugee needed to show...
You needed to show that you were had a permission to leave, and that was done with a visa.
So that's why the action of those, the Japanese and Chinese diplomat, was so important.
Yes.
20,000, eventually.
That's the estimate. There are several sources of immigration, and of course the pattern changes over the course of the war. Initially, people tried to make their way to Trieste and come by boat from Trieste through the Suez Canal.
Trieste
around,
in
Italy. And to come around through the Suez Canal and past Saudi Arabia and past India to Malaysia and eventually to Shanghai. That's a pretty long voyage. And That route gets closed off in June of 1940 when Italy enters the war. And then some folks were able to make it overland after that for a year. And then when the U.S.
Overland through Russia.
Through Russia. And then when the U.S. enters the war in December of 1941, all routes are cut off. And it's only a handful of Jewish migrants who have already are part of the way there, somewhere in Asia, that are able to make it to Shanghai after that point.
Once they got to Shanghai, where did they live?
Initially, they could live almost anywhere in the international settlement. Shanghai, of course, was governed by the what are referred to as the unequal treaties, where the European powers had all said, we'll make Shanghai an international city. And so there was an international settlement. So later in the war, when the Germans get word that there is a large Jewish community in Shanghai, they send a representative named Meisinger to go to tell the Japanese that they need to exterminate the Jews of Shanghai. And the Japanese are reticent to do that. They agree to put them in a ghetto, which is Hongkou, and they establish a ghetto pass system, which is described in the exhibit. But they let the Jews survive the war. In other words, from 1943, they are confined to the ghetto, but they are able to survive the war because the Japanese refused to adopt the German plan to exterminate them.
Had there already been a Jewish settlement in Shanghai?
Yes, there had been. There are three groups of Jewish residents in Shanghai. The first group, including the families known as the Sassoons and the Kadoris, came from originally from Iraq, and they came through India to Hong Kong and Shanghai to establish commercial centers in both those cities. And so those were well-established residents of the community. Then there was a group that came just before the war who had been working on the Trans-Siberian Railway extension into Manchuria. And so they were Russian Jews who had been in Manchuria at the time that the Japanese took over Manchuria. And they had emigrated to Shanghai. And then the third group is the Central and Eastern European Jews who came as part of this escape from Nazi terror.
Is there a significant Jewish community in Shanghai today?
No. The community lasted longer in Shanghai than we would tend to think. We think of the war as being just 4 years, right, from Pearl Harbor to Hiroshima. But the war for the people who went to Shanghai began when they escaped Germany in 37 and 38, and most of them stayed until at least 47, some of them as late as 49, before moving on to other sites around the world. So they were actually in Shanghai for anywhere from 7 to 10 years. And so it was an important episode in their history. Very few stayed on after the communist regime took over China.
In 1949.
Some did, but not many.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast, speaking with Marvin Pinkert, Executive Director of the Jewish Museum of Maryland. We're talking about the museum's new exhibit, Jewish Refugees and Shanghai. It opens on Sunday. What is this exhibit? What will visitors to the museum see?
It is mainly the 52 panels that are coming from China that document the experience of the Jewish community there. Some of them are the history that I've just described, but some of them profile individuals who live through the experience. And they include famous people like Peter Max, the artist, and Michael Bloomberg, the Secretary of the Treasury.
They
grew up in Shanghai.
They grew up in Shanghai.
And Peter Max has his original painting teacher was Chinese in Shanghai. It's a bit amazing.
Things we never knew, yeah.
And then, but a lot of it is documenting everyday life. How was religious life, the bar mitzvahs that took place in Shanghai, the choir at the synagogue. There's also documentation of weddings and births and every aspect of life. How did people survive? What was their occupation? You know, if you're a dentist, you join the Shanghai League of Dentists that was set up for the international dentists who were escaping the war in Shanghai. But if you were a lawyer, you had to learn to be a carpenter or some other occupation that was useful in Shanghai, because being a lawyer in Germany was no preparation for any job that existed in Shanghai.
It was so incredibly crowded, especially
right
after 42.
Right. After they were confined to the ghetto,
so,
which already had tens of thousands of Chinese living there.
What
and
do
they
these,
lived side by side with their Chinese neighbors.
So what does the exhibit show about that?
It shows that there was real affection, because both parties were being persecuted in different ways. The Japanese occupiers were not very kind to the Chinese residents of Shanghai. And so there was a lot of empathy going on between the Chinese community and the Jewish community.
There's an accompanying exhibit that focuses on the Maryland connection to Shanghai Jews. Tell us about that.
It's a small exhibit that just features three stories, one of which is the Kurtz family. One of the first couples to marry in Shanghai are William and Selma Kurtz, and they travel from Shanghai after the war in 1947 to Baltimore, where they make their lives here again. And we have, as part of our collection, their Chinese marriage certificate, and that will be put on display. The Yvonne Daniels, who was born in Shanghai, has materials that she brought back from the reunions that we're putting on display, including a directory of the thousands of names of people who experienced, Jews who experienced war in Shanghai. And then finally, we have a poster from the United Jewish Appeal trying to raise money to help the Jews of Shanghai here in Baltimore during the war.
Maryland connections.
Yep.
So you've got all these panels, I think you said more than 50.
Right.
Visual representations of
right.
the history you've been telling us about. And then what is the programming that you've built onto that, because you have such a short time
right.
to show this exhibit?
So we decided that this was an excellent platform for doing some really exciting things programmatically. That includes two films, one of which is a Maryland premiere, Above the Drowning Sea, which documents this relationship between the Chinese and Jewish communities. And then there's another film narrated by Leonard Nimoy that is about a group of young people who go to China, Jewish folks from Israel, the United States, Australia, Canada, who are seeking out the oldest Jewish community in China, which is in Kaifeng. It's over 1,000 years old. But they haven't had a worship service there in over 100 years. And they decide that they'll have the first Shabbat service in Kaifeng in 100 years. And they the film documents their journey. It's really a wonderful film. And then we have a program called Kreplach and Dim Sum, which is about the interaction of the cultures within China. And we have a survivor, Yvonne Daniel, who'll be talking about her experiences. And especially when she went back and became part of what are called the rickshaw reunions, which are gatherings of the surviving folks who were in Shanghai to go back to Shanghai and meet the families that they knew when they were children.
Yvonne Daniel lives in Maryland?
Yeah, Yvonne Daniels lived in Maryland. She was born in Shanghai, but she was very young when she left.
You've got a lot going on. Thanks for telling us about it.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It's very exciting.
Marvin Pinkert is executive director of the Jewish Museum of Maryland. The exhibit Jewish Refugees and Shanghai opens this Sunday, February 3rd, and runs for 5 weeks through March 10th. There's a special members event, Vienna Meets Shanghai, on Saturday evening that will feature music, dancing Chinese dragons, and culinary treats from both cultures. We have a link to more information about that and several other events at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. Quick break now on the record, and then On the Record producer Melissa Gear visits an 81-year-old Jewish ping pong champion who grew up in Shanghai and eventually made his way to Baltimore. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay tuned.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking today about the Jewish Museum of Maryland's new exhibit, Jewish Refugees and Shanghai, that opens this weekend. Executive Director Marvin Pinkert gave us an overview. He also told us about an article in the Baltimore Jewish Times that led us to Jack Jacob, an 81-year-old table tennis champion who grew up in a Jewish community in Shanghai. Now, On the Record producer Melissa Geer catches up with him at his home in Pikesville.
This is a picture of the hierarchy of the Chinese ping pong players. It's amazing. They're all Chinese, and then there's this young Jewish kid, 17-year-old Jewish kid, over here, who beats the champion of China, champion of Asia, and champion of Hong Kong. I was born in Shanghai, China, in 1937, to a Sephardic father and an Ashkenaz mother. And my Sephardic father came from Iraq sometime in the early 1800s. And they settled into a beautiful community in Shanghai. And my mother came from the Crimea. My mother left Russia because of the pogroms in the early 1900s. They fled to China, and for some reason she came to visit Shanghai when she was probably in her 20s, and then she met my father, and they got married in the 20s, and they had three kids. They had my two sisters and myself.
Were you completely freely practicing Judaism? I mean, you had access to everything you had. You didn't have to be hiding anything.
No, we didn't hide it because we were amongst the Chinese, and the Chinese were the nicest people in the world to live with. We lived within a conclave of the Jewish conclave within the Chinese community, and we had schools, synagogues, we had our own kashrut, we had our own Brit Milah, it was a normal surviving Jewish community in Shanghai.
I'm curious, for the Jewish holidays, there's really specific traditional foods. Do you have memories of that might be a little different than what we think about here in Baltimore?
That's a fascinating question. I love that question. Because the Sephardic community have their unique foods. And we had a cook in the house who somehow learned how to cook these Sephardic foods. My mother learned how to cook these Sephardic foods. And we had pirishki, which is a Russian food. Which my mother made, you know, the Russian dish. But then we had Sephardic food, we had Russian dishes, and we had terrific Chinese food.
I always wondered if that was where the big connection between Jews and Chinese food came from.
Fantastic. I mean, I remember the amount of fish my mother would make with the Chinese food. She learned how to cook Chinese.
Did you ever wonder, as a young child, what your family was doing in the middle of a country where you and your family looked different than most of the people who live there? I mean,
I can reminisce right now, but you know, with 1 billion Chinese and a few thousand non-Chinese in the area, I probably thought back and I said, what are we doing over here? I had no idea. What was going through my mind at that time was playing ping pong.
Yeah, so tell me about how you were exposed to this, and it really took over your life.
I was exposed to ping pong because I belonged to a club, and there was a fellow by the name of George Konsopolsky. He was such a fabulous player. I was probably 8, 9, 10, 11-year-old watching this guy play, and then I just took it up. And then when we moved from Shanghai to Macau, because my father moved his factory to Macau, I met one of the top players in the world, Raul Rozaduki, who saw me play at the age of 11, 12, 13. He says, oh my God, this guy's good. And he spent a lot of time training me. At the age of 16, 17, I was tops in the world. I mean, I'd beat the best players in the world.
Where were you playing, though, when you were 9, 10, 11? You were allowed to play in that club, or were you playing at home? Or
Well, I played ping pong on my dining room table till I was 11. My parents didn't kill me for it. I'm just surprised. I would never allow my kids to play on my dining room table. Never would happen. But I played on that dining room table, and I played at the club in Shanghai. But then when I went to Macau, they had over 90 clubs, 90 clubs. Amazing. When we arrived there, there was a club almost on every block. And I just played, and they saw a good player play, and they introduced me to some good players, and they developed me, and I ended up being a very good player over there.
Take me on the path that brought you, though, to the United States, because you said you were born in Shanghai and then you lived in Macau. And then what happened?
Well, I lived in Macau for 5.5 years because my father had to move his factory from Shanghai to Macau. And then we moved to the United States because my sisters were living in the United States. They came here in about 1946. They came here as students. And then one got married, ended up in San Francisco. And my other sister was in New York, and then she eventually came to San Francisco. So my parents said, why don't we go to be with the girls? So we came to San Francisco.
And what happened to the table tennis when you came to the United States?
When I came to the United States, I went to high school, played a little table tennis. But then when I went to Berkeley, well, electrical engineering, you don't see the sunshine for about 6 years. So I stopped playing ping pong and other sports. And then after that, I played a little bit in California, not much. Right, and then I kind of petered out until I came to Baltimore in about 1993. When I came here, I met a gentleman who was running a club, ping pong club. And since 1993 till today, 2019, I've been part of that same club, and we're having a lot of fun.
And what is it about ping pong or table tennis, whatever you want to call it, what is it that you love so much about it?
It's an active sport. You think all the time. Every shot is different. Forehands and backhands, and you're thinking all the time. It's a very difficult sport. It's not a simple sport to play. When you play it properly, when you're hitting the ball at 100 miles an hour, you're really getting a good workout. A good workout, and you're thinking, and it's a lot of fun, okay. And it's enjoyable. Now, hold this paddle. Now, the way you hold the paddle is like you shake hands.
Okay.
So just shake hands with the paddle, and I'm just going to play backhand. Backhand, usually it's an easier way for you to just push the ball, right?
Okay.
So just shake hands with it,
mm-hmm.
Stand straight,
okay.
And then when the ball comes, if you hit the ceiling, just bend this a little bit.
Okay.
Okay, so you're gonna be playing ping pong, and it's for this for 3 year old can do it. And a 3 year old can do it.
That was two at one.
No. Okay. There we go. Beautiful.
Oh my God. That was actually.
Nana, you're good.
Really,
you're a natural.
Good advice.
Oh my gosh, you're a natural.
Okay, but you need to turn the machine off.
You're better than a natural. I'm hiring you.
Now I feel like Lucille Ball.
Okay. I'm hiring you.
Thank you. Oh my gosh.
See,
that was really good advice, though, what you said about
an angle.
Twist your.
Just at an angle.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. All
see,
of those things.
And this is computerized.
Right.
And you can go as fast as you want.
Yeah.
It can go all over the place. It hits the ball everywhere you want, as fast, top spin, underspin, any kind of spin you want. I got the world champion till 2 o'clock in the morning. He can play with me anytime. Isn't that amazing? This can play anytime, 24 hours a day.
I got never gets tired.
I got the world champion to play with me anytime I want. And boy, it can get...
At whatever level you...
At any level.
Yeah. Wow.
This exposes you to what ping pong can be.
Right.
This changes.
Yeah.
Changes the picture.
That was On the Record producer Melissa Gear getting a lesson from ping pong champion Jack Jacob, who grew up in a Jewish neighborhood in Shanghai, China in the 1940s. To learn more, don't miss the Jewish Museum of Maryland exhibit, Jewish Refugees and Shanghai, that opens this weekend. We have a link to information at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. I'm Sheila Cass. Thanks for listening. Come back tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.